The views expressed in the following podcast are not necessarily the views of the United States Air Force or the Air Force Reserve, but rather the perspectives of the individual speakers. No endorsement of any particular person, business, or interest is ever intended.
Greetings, Alamo Wing. Welcome back to Ready, Set, Airlift. I'm your host, Julian Hernandez, from the 433rd Airlift Wing Public Affairs Office. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. Tragically, some 40,000 Americans die by suicide each year. The stresses and demands of military life can put service members at greater risk of being affected by this public health issue. The Department of Defense has dedicated significant resources towards making sure each of us undergoes training to combat this crisis. But today, we want to go beyond the briefings and have a candid conversation about what suicide prevention really means in our day-to-day lives. All right, Ms. Frances Martinez, Chaplain Heather Mendoza, thank you both for making some time and joining me today to talk about a difficult but important topic today as we proceed into the DOD's Suicide Awareness Month here in September. But let's start out with a little introduction, a little bit more about what each of you do. Frances?
So I am the Director of Psychological Health at the 960th Cyberspace Wing. And at one point in time, the 433rd did not have a DPH, so I covered down for you guys as well. So providing consultation and support to leadership, along with a gap in coverage for our airmen and families.
Perfect. Chaplain Mendoza?
I'm the Deputy Wing Chaplain for the 433rd, and we provide support to the 960th as well. Our team helps in providing spiritual care, as well as providing that 100% confidentiality. So it's important that we're integrated with other resources so that we can make those connections when it's necessary.
I think I'm going to start the conversation off with what could be a little bit of a difficult question, but suicide prevention is a topic that's briefed annually to our airmen, and it's part of their training requirements. I think a concern with that can be that it can become, for some airmen, background noise. So how do we encourage our airmen and talk about this in a way that goes beyond that briefing, that goes beyond the training or the CBT or the annual lines that get repeated?
Yeah, so the annual training, it's very structured, right? We have certain things that we have to touch with each person, whether they are emerging leaders or senior leaders, because there are protocols that we have to follow, right? So I understand that part. However, suicide prevention is not just annually. It's not just in September. It should be every day. And I think a lot of times we miss that. Every day we can have a conversation with somebody about something, breaking the stigma, talking about lethal means safety, all of these things. It doesn't only have to be that one time. And a lot of times we miss those opportunities to really have these conversations. I talked to my wing yesterday, the squadron commanders, group commanders, and wing commander. Yes, it is something that we need to do during stand-up. Take a couple of minutes and just talk about what 988 is, or what is this specific resource. If we start engaging and having these conversations on a regular basis, it's not just that once a year, oh, here we go again, here's this training I have to do.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think the training gives us really good tools, but I think what it misses is the pause. And that's kind of what you were saying with those daily conversations of like leaders pausing and switching from task-oriented to being people-oriented, to learning who your people are and what they're looking forward to, and being able to recognize when something's different. So that's what I would say. We miss the necessity of pressing pause to check in on our people and to be aware for ourselves when maybe we're not at our best, and recognizing what we might need, you know, what resources we need to reach out for our own selves.
I think the other part is too, is that we learn these skills, right? But no one really ever applies them until it comes time that we have to intervene. The chaplain and I are very well versed in suicide prevention and managing crisis, but A1C might not be. right? And so we've had an exercise before, shortly after our suicide prevention training. We had a person in distress walk around, disheveled, and it took six people. It was a sixth person that that person interacted with before they're like, are you okay? Like, what's going on with you? So all these people had that opportunity, and it was, they were all missed opportunities. One person even said, are you okay? And they're like, no, I'm not doing good. And they're like, oh, okay. And walked off.
Wow.
Right. And so things like this is like, we have to also kind of incorporate some of that real life exercises and experiences for us to kind of look back and be like, dang, I really missed that one, or I should have done this, because it's someone's life at the end of the day.
Agreed. And, you know, I want to draw you out a little bit more on that, because recognizing the signs is such a fundamental first step, right, in beginning any kind of intervention. So I'd like to draw you both out a little bit more on, beyond the CBT, the training, the briefings, like, how do we really get our airmen to intuitively understand, our leaders too, like you were saying, the pressing of the pause, understanding those signs intuitively, and then also kind of some mental notes of like, hey, these are the actions that we need to hit.
So there are certain signs that, you know, changes in behavior are very important to look at. Who are the first person, or who's the first person to recognize those changes? Family members or coworkers that are really tight-knit, right? So if you don't know your members, you're not going to know that they're going through a divorce or they started drinking more or things like that, right? It's those people that have those really close relationships. So when we talk about risk factors, we really want to look at, you know, members that are under investigation, are at higher risk of either attempting or dying by suicide, whether it's legal issues or maybe they're going through some sort of mishap at work and they're under investigation. Relationship stressors are number one, at least in our wing, that we've noticed. So are they going through a divorce? Are they going through custody battle? What's, you know, my husband or wife is leaving me for someone else, like all of these things. And who's going to know that? Right? Like, would you assume that a wing commander is going to know that about someone in the squadron? Probably not. But it's up to those members that are in direct contact with that person that are probably going to recognize those changes in behavior. Maybe they're more distracted. Maybe they're talking about dying. Like, you know, it'd just be better if I just wasn't here. What do you mean by that? Right? Chaplain, is there anything else that you want to add to that?
I think if I could paint a picture of what you said, I often use the analogy of a pot of boiling water. And every single one of us is walking through life like this boiling pot of water with nothing in it but just the water. And then when you add some of the things that you kind of mentioned, things that so many people don't realize are huge stressors, like a move, a life event, someone's born, you know, a birth, a death, just major life changes. And you add those, so you begin adding stuff into that boiling pot of water. And I think it's being able to kind of name that for your coworker, for the people you work with or for, to say, hey, you know, you've got XYZ going on. How are you doing? Mm-hmm. How are you here on the reserve weekend when you've been having to move, you know, in the middle of your civilian job, and, you know, kind of just laying it out there for them just to kind of highlight that, hey, you're going through a lot right now. Yeah. And how are you doing through that?
So those are the early, very early stages that we can intervene, right? But when you're talking about significant behavior change, I'm going to bring up Robin Williams, for instance, right? He, you know, very well-known comedian, but if you hear his story, and I've spoken to his son, so we've talked at length about, you know, his change on camera versus off camera, what that really looked like. And sometimes at work, we present this particular way, right? Like smiling, laughing, really engaging, and you know, get home and I'm drinking, I'm yelling, I'm super irritable. And so I think that's a part where our key support liaison can engage with families and, you know, talk about that. There was at one point family suicide prevention training that we had offered so families can recognize those signs and symptoms. But it's, again, really getting engaged in those people's lives that can ultimately help them. But like the chaplain said, when you know, you're presenting like, hey, you know, I wouldn't be okay if I was going through all those things, right? And like, how are you doing? So I think some people are scared to ask because they're worried about the answer they might get and not know how to respond.
Yeah, and I absolutely think that a lot of this, you hear it lumped into that phrase, like, be a good wingman, right? Check in on your people, talk to your people. But I feel like it's one of those phrases that's around so much, like, what does it really mean, though? Like, when you say be a good wingman, what is it that we actually expect people to do when we encourage them to do that? Chaplain?
Yeah, I think it starts with some of what we've talked about, getting to know people. I think it also starts with ourselves to flip it. You know, if I'm going to be a good wingman and I'm going to be part of this wing, I need to make sure that I'm okay. And so not waiting until I have, you know, four or five things on my plate that are really big stressors, but recognizing when I do start getting snappy, you know, at home, that my behavior changes or... But recognizing it within myself, each individual, and using the resources that we have available to us and fighting against the stigma, I would say, or the facade that we have to have it all together and be perfect. And that's not real life.
And I think the stigma, we'll talk about that for a little bit. Cyber is very stigmatized, right? Because I'm going to lose my security clearance, then I can't do my job, then I'm going to get separated, all of these negative thoughts, right? But the Defense Counterintelligence Agency post, you know, they had 7.7 million adjudicated security clearances and only like 130 or 160, I don't remember the exact number, were denied solely for psychiatric or psychological reasons. You know, it's very little, less than 200 out of 7.7 million. But the other thing is that when we're talking about suicide, I think a lot of people have the misconception that suicide is not a mental disorder, right? It's not. It's a action behavior based on whatever's going on. Someone with depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, sure, they're going to have higher risk of attempting or dying by suicide, right, because of that. But there's a lot of circumstantial stuff that happens, right? Maybe I got in a car accident and I killed somebody, right, by driving drunk, for instance, and I just go and act and choose to die by suicide. That's not a history of mental disorder, right? And sometimes I think people lump those together and they feel like, well, if I'm suicidal, I'm wrong, something's going on, right? And it's not the case.
You know, I think that misconception you pointed out is huge because I'm guilty of it myself, of sitting in these trainings and thinking this will never happen to me. Like this doesn't apply to me, right? But that's not true. All sorts of things could happen in my life that could alter my behavior and take me to that place, right? So how do we express that message to the group is like, hey, you can't go into these things thinking that you're above the fray, right? Like what's a better way maybe of saying that, communicating that out to the airmen?
Suicide does not discriminate.
That's good.
Does not discriminate. Doesn't care what rank you are. Doesn't care your background. Again, yes, there are some protective factors, like maybe if you have a spiritual background, maybe you have a good support system, things of that nature, those are going to help you, deter you, but it doesn't prevent you, right? Suicide is preventable. We talk about that all the time. But again, it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care, right? And again, when people feel like there is nothing, hopelessness is the one thing. When people become hopeless, they become desperate, right? And then that's what leads to the ultimate act.
Absolutely. And going back to the point about the stigma, I think it plays in with another point about that pause, right? I think it's on our leaders primarily. It's everyone's responsibility, but leaders are at the front having to set that tone, having to create an environment where as much as possible, the stigma is reduced. Chaplain, you know, as the uniformed member in the room, what would be your message to leaders of how they can be better about creating a positive environment that reduces, minimizes the stigma? And then again, going back to some tips on knowing when to hit pause.
Yeah, I think being true to themselves and leading by example, if not, you're a leader and you have to, you know, you have to do that. You have to lead. But there are moments where you can demonstrate to members what it looks like to maybe need to press pause yourself, and knowing when and how to do that, even if it's a small thing. I'll use the example of earlier in the year, my father passed away and I came back from that. And my first drill back, I was, you know, speaking to a group and I wasn't at my best. And I tried to come up with the best words as I was preparing for it. And I paused and I was like, what am I doing? You know, I can say to them, hey, I'm not at my best this month, but I'm here to encourage you and to demonstrate, to model for you that we're not all perfect. You know, I didn't stand before them and cry and give them my whole story, but I took that moment to share that as leaders, we're human too. And I think that's one of the things that I've learned from moving from CGO to FGO is your leaders really do care. It takes being more intentional and it takes more effort to demonstrate that, but they really do care about each member that they're leading. And so if they can really demonstrate that, you know, through ways of showing how they're not perfect and they don't always have it together, I think that's the way to do it.
One good example, I was talking to a two-star general about this. They were going to they're very open about it. We've had a podcast about it, but talking about going to mental health, right? And we're going to bring the general behind, like, the stairs that don't lead to the mental health clinic and, you know, kind of usher them in. He's like, no, why? Right? Like, people need to see me check in at the mental health clinic. People need to see me coming to you guys. So if they know I can come, it's okay for them to come, right? And I think sometimes, again, we get that rank kind of rosy glasses, right? And, oh, we got to do all these things. I mean, I'm going to say it. Like, if you are leading people and we're telling them, hey, it's okay to go to mental health or go here, go there for your resources. I mean, we would say go to the gym, right? We would encourage people to go exercise. We did a 5K yesterday. Why not mental health? Why is it so secret, right? And so he even talked about, like, on his calendar, he put mental health appointment. His exec was like, oh, I'm just going to put medical appointment. He's like, no, put it on there because I want people to see I'm getting help, I'm getting treatment, and they should also do the same thing.
That's leadership, right? Like, that transparency, that openness, modeling the right behavior, as you were saying, Chaplain. And Francis, you mentioned in there the 5K run from yesterday. I'd like to explore that a little bit more because I think that's a concrete effort of how the 960th and the 433rd are teaming up this year with leaders at the front. Both Colonel Garrison and Colonel Jeffrey were there yesterday to kick off. I'll let you tell it in better detail.
Yeah, so this is our fifth year. We're doing our 40,000-mile challenge. And so what that means, the expectation is everybody within the 960th, right? And this year, we're doing a competition against the 433rd.
All right, here we go.
All right, so here we go. And so what we've done in the past, because we're geographically separated, one, it's a great way to get suicide prevention out there, talk about it, right? And also kind of have some sort of engagement. Again, it's hard when you're geographically separated. And so what we do is a 40,000 mile challenge. The first thing is why 40,000 miles? Because about 40,000 people in the U.S. die every year by suicide. And those are the only, like, that's what we can estimate because not everything is always confirmed or, and so that's our best guess. And so with the 960th, the calculation is if everyone walks 1 mile a day in September, we will reach that 40,000 mile goal. That's 100% participation, right? And so that's our goal. We've had a traveling trophy for the highest percentage of participation. And this year, we're going to do it with the 433rd. So wing versus wing. Whoever has not the highest mileage, because you guys have more people and we're kind of uneven.
Let us have this.
So it's actually, you know, the mileage divided by how many members you have total in that wing, including civilians. Family members can join in. Their miles count too. But we have signs that says, you know, I'm walking for, and you can put in if you're walking for a particular person, if you're walking for those that have died, family members that remain. And so we take pictures along the way, and we share that across the all of AFRC. We won the Defense Suicide Prevention Office as recognition for suicide prevention. So we were there last year, and that was a big part of that award, was that event.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward. I can speak from the PA office perspective of, you know, we're looking forward to seeing the coverage and helping get the message out there. And yeah, the competition's cool. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think everybody wins because, you know, what we're talking about here is a real readiness issue, right? Like, we need all of our troops to get the mission done. And so everything that we can do to help keep troops in the fight healthy, moving in the right direction, is huge. So, no, we're really excited to participate in this effort. I think in these conversations too, like, resources, right? Like, this, the run can be considered a resource as an outlet for people to contribute and help, you know, move the message forward. But there's all sorts of resources that are available to airmen, but this can become like the CBT is, like, the links go out, and here there's 10 different links that you can go to get resources or whatever. Which are the ones that you would kind of highlight as the, if you remember nothing else, this is the one?
Yeah. So there are, I would say my top three is going to be your chaplains, your DPHs, and Military OneSource. Those are the top three for our military and the families. There's 988, but that's, you know, a 24-hour hotline for crisis and suicide prevention. But, you know, Military OneSource is great because it really is a one-stop shop. So if I'm calling and I'm really frustrated because, you know, I need couples counseling, or, hey, I need some resources for finding employment, like, whatever your stressors are, they offer a ton. I think people only associate the counseling part. They have financial counselors, they have resume skills, all kinds of different types of things for families, childcare resources, lots of different things out there that can take a big chunk of stressors off of somebody if they just call. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but militaryonesource.gov.mil, I think it is. You can just Google Military OneSource.
99% confidence if you Google Military OneSource, yeah. you'll get to where you need to be. Yeah.
So chaplains, I mean, I'll let you talk about your 100% confidentiality.
Yeah, so we have 100% confidentiality, and it's always interesting, I'll say, whenever we ask, okay, and a large group of people will ask, okay, so what does that mean? And people will inevitably raise their hand and say, well, you have to report if the person says this or they say that. But the truth is the chaplains have 100% confidentiality, meaning we are not mandated reporters. So anything discussed, we cannot legally disclose that to anyone. And so I often will use, you know, an exaggerated example to kind of highlight that, and just kind of say, you know, if somebody shares something that is leading to a harm to themselves or harm to others, we're probably going to become really good friends, right? I'm not going to let you out of my sight. We're going to be close. But that's even more the reason why anytime I go to a new base, I'm establishing those new connections with the DPH, with military family readiness, you know, these different resources so that I know, you know, hey, this is a resource that we have here. I know, you know, Frances personally, I know she can get you the help that you need. And walking the person over to the resource that they need, that answers the question.
Absolutely. And I'll include a personal note. Our new GPH here at the 433rd, Miss Dina Lewis.
Yes.
She's been a guest on the podcast before, and I can say I'm working with her right now to work through some things myself. So her door is open. She's outstanding. She's available. And I'm already sensing a difference thanks to the fact that I'm working with her. So I really would encourage all our listeners. No issues too small, right?
Coming from
two subject matters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right?
No. And this is more relationship based, but I often will use the example of like in a marriage. People often come when it's like, we're ready to get divorced. And it's like, well, I wish you would have just come when it was really making you angry that they wouldn't take the trash out. You know, so go, like you said, when it just seems kind of simple and silly to kind of ask for help and get ahead of it before it's a bigger issue.
Yeah, with the DPH program, so similar to the chaplain, right? We were trying to focus on stressors and teaching people skills, right? We don't have the privilege of having the 100% confidentiality because we are mandated reporters, right? So if someone's suicidal, homicidal, we're going to have to get them some help and notify their supervisors or commanders, right? First sergeants to get these people to the appropriate level of care. But if it's something like, yeah, my spouse is not taking out the trash and I'm tired of them not doing that and I'm just, you know, at my wit's ends, we're going to work on communication. We're going to work on boundaries. We're going to work on all of these other skills. So it doesn't end in divorce over trash. Right. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that if I'm not the right person, so I'm not a financial counselor, right? But if you have money stressors, we could talk about the stressors and all these great things and talk about some cognitive behavioral approaches. But I'm going to give you to our personal financial counselor that can help you build the budget and do all these great things. So that's why I say, you know, the DPHs and the chaplains, we're well connected with all the other resources. And so if we're not the right person for you, we will, you know, walk you, hold your hand, call them for you to help you get set up with whatever is the appropriate resource.
That first step is always the hardest one, that making that decision of, hey, I need to admit that I need some assistance, you know, getting through the door. Chaplain Mendoza, for you, you know, I think the chaplain's office has obviously a strong tie to faith and faith-based support, which is, of course, appropriate. But again, full transparency, I'm not a person of the strongest faith, you know, and I would imagine I'm not the only one in the wing. But for those people, how does that still play? Like, if we were to go seek your help, how does that play out for people who aren't faith-led, I guess?
I often make a joke of, I'm not going to hit you over the head with a Bible when you come in my office.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Unless you ask for it, maybe.
I did go to Catholic school. And there's something to be said about, you know, the religious item, you know, punishment.
Yeah. So I'm a pastor to some, but I'm a chaplain to all. And at the end of the day, I'm going to help anyone who walks in my door. And if I can't help, if I'm not the best person for them. Maybe they would like to speak to a different chaplain, or maybe their need is more the DPH lane. That's something that, you know, we're going to go through. But yeah, I'm not here to tell you what you believe is right or wrong. I'm here to walk alongside of you.
And correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of chaplains do have counseling backgrounds, mm-hmm. right? So similar to the DPHs, maybe they're not licensed, but they have that foundation of, you know, skill-based approaches and managing stress, things of that nature. So it's not always, you know, faith-based, or doesn't have to be faith-based.
Yeah, it really looks at like a person, what gives their life meaning. What gives their life purpose? And that's kind of like, I would say, what we consider our wheelhouse. And a lot of times that is faith-based activities, right? But sometimes it's running. Sometimes it's nature, you know? And what does that look like for the person who just walked in my office? Because I'm chaplain, the two Christian chaplains could sit side by side and they could have very opposing views on different things. So, I mean, it's about the person, the humanity, you know?
What I'm taking away is at the end of the day, just go and have that conversation. And whether it's faith-based or secular, you'll get the resources that you need. They're out there. And the resources understand the other resources and can direct you and down the correct path.
And to Chaplain's point, I think sometimes people are like, well, I tried counseling and that counselor sucks. So all counselors suck. I'm not going to go back, right? Everyone's not for everybody. So sometimes you got to try out, right? Try different shoes on, see which one has the right fit before you, you know, cast out counseling or seeking out help. And so, you know, again, Dina and I, we work together, we go back and forth. And if someone was like, hey, I want to, you know, see someone else, then, you know, I can refer you to another provider. But I think that sometimes people get stuck in their mind, like, I tried it once and it sucked and I'm not going back. Try it three times. And if they all suck, come to me and I'll find you another person that I promise won't suck. So,
yeah, what's the old wisdom? If at first you don't succeed, try again. Yeah. And so as we started, our point here is to add on to the training, not become the training, right? So we don't want to lecture anybody or be too long here, but I definitely would like to open it up for just mathematically speaking, we have to have airmen right now who are out in the wing, who are going through difficult times. You know, what message, bottom line, if they hear nothing else from this episode, what's your message to those airmen?
Be here tomorrow.
I like that. Be here tomorrow. I would want them to know that their life has meaning and that it has purpose and that they're a part of this Air Force family. And just like any family, we want them here. And so maybe it takes the first step of reaching out to one of these resources. And that can be really overwhelming and hard and difficult, but you're worth it. And we would miss you if you didn't take that first step.
Yeah. And I can tell you, if you've never seen The Ripple Effect, it's a documentary from Kevin Hines. He's the gentleman that jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge in an attempt to die by suicide, and he survived. He's like one of five people to ever survive that fall. He's the only person to gain full mobility. He talks about that the moment he jumped off the bridge, he instantly regretted his decision. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, and I don't think we talked much about this in our training, most of the time, suicide is very impulsive. I think sometimes people have the misconception of there's going to be a long, drawn-out suicide notes and all these things, and I'm, you know, constantly giving people signs and symptoms. But most of the time, it's like within 10 minutes, the decision to the act, and very impulsive, right? And so when we think about that, like, I think sometimes we lose focus of everybody else and we're only focusing on our problem. And our problem is temporary, right? And there's always a solution to the problem. But sometimes people are just focused on ending that problem through suicide. So I would say if you've never seen that documentary, it's a couple years old, I would recommend that because it talks about the ripple effect. Everyone else that's left behind that are picking up the pieces after suicide.
Well, a difficult topic, but I hope that what we've discussed here will at least help one person, you know, who hears the show and gets them to a better place. So thank you both, Chaplain Mendoza, Francis, for making time and having this conversation with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
The National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline can be reached 24/7, 365 by dialing 988. Again, that's 988 from any phone. Always remember, you matter. Acknowledging when you need help and reaching out is a sign of strength. Before we go, a reminder that you can find the most important announcements for each UTA on the monthly Alamo Flyer, which is sent out via military email before each drill. Don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow the podcast on whichever platform you like to listen on. Also, please don't hesitate to leave us a review if you're enjoying the show or have ideas for future episodes. Thank you for spending some time with us today. I've been your host, Julian Hernandez. We hope you have a successful UTA.